This is Girl on the River, the podcast. Whole crew, come forward to row. Hello and welcome back to Girl on the River, the podcast for episode 11. Now, this week, I think we should all be giving ourselves a massive pat on the back just for getting through January. Finally, the nights are getting a little bit shorter and the days are getting a little bit longer. And I hope you're feeling that there's light at the end of the tunnel. Now, tomorrow, the 4th of February, is Time to Talk Day, which is all about getting the nation talking about mental health. And this year, more than any other, I think it's absolutely essential that we are as open as we can be about mental health issues and finally banish the stigma that I'm afraid still surrounds mental health. It's because of Time to Talk Day that I have chosen this week for my latest guest. Rui D'Souza Staton is my youngest guest so far at 17 years of age, but he has wisdom well beyond his years. Rui is a member of Monmouth Rowing Club and is captain of boats at Monmouth School for Boys. But although we do chat about rowing, that is not sadly the main reason for having him on the podcast. In April 2019, Rui's brother JJ took his own life. Since then, Rui has raised many thousands of pounds for the mental health charity Mind via the campaign Rowing Together for Healthy Minds. Before we begin, I should warn listeners, just so you're aware in advance, that we talk about mental health problems and teenage suicide during the interview. I'll put details of Rui's fundraising page and links to Time to Talk, Mind, Rowing Together for Healthy Minds and the Samaritans in the show notes, which you can find on my website or wherever you get your podcast. And now I'm extremely proud to introduce you to Rui. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure, and it's always nice to have a fellow member of Monmouth Rowing Club on the podcast, flying the flag for Monmouth. But we are talking at the most bizarre time when we are mid-lockdown, mid-pandemic, and you are having to do your schoolwork online. So how is that going?
Well, obviously, it's not the most enjoyable time, is it, for everyone? But my school, I'm very lucky to be at a school where they are giving me everything I need. I'm having a pretty much exactly normal school day, except just online.
Do you get any of the fun that you have in class? Because when I look back to school, you know, the whole fun of it was having someone sitting next to you, kind of drawing something silly on your file or, you know, nudging you and whispering. How does that happen online? Does it still happen?
Yeah, that's where the difficulty comes, I suppose, because you can't have that interaction that you usually do in person. But of course, we still have our phones, don't we? So we're always still talking to each other separately from the teacher's call.
Ah, so that's how it goes down. Brilliant. I'm so glad to hear that. What happens if someone's really naughty? Obviously you're sixth form, so it's not quite the same, but I did get sent out of class in sixth form for giggling too much. So, you know, what happens if someone misbehaves?
Oh, well, I think the classic example is Teams backgrounds and Zoom backgrounds. You can add your own photo and you can put... So I think the best example I have was we were studying... In English once, we were studying a Doll's House, and we're talking about the themes around societal expectations and stuff. And it was a really serious topic. And suddenly one of the people in my class decided to change their background to Minecraft. And we were all really serious. And suddenly the teachers started laughing. And just we were all really confused because we were looking at our text instead of the screens. And we were really confused. But I suppose it can't really be done. You just sort of got to have a laugh about it, really.
Well, I'm glad that you're still managing to have some fun with it all, because I do think the challenges for people of your generation are really, it's something that no one of my generation has ever experienced, and we all really feel for you. Now, I have known your family, I was trying to work it out, I think it's for 14 years, since you were a little nipper coming with your mum to pick your brother up in the playground. And we are here because of your older brother, James, also known as JJ. who was in my younger son's class at school. And my memories of him are of this little smiley boy appearing. I used to find it hard to actually distinguish him and my son. This is a terrible thing to admit as a mother, but he and Will, my son, had a very sort of similar shape of face and they were about the same height. And when they came running out of school, I couldn't always initially tell them apart from a distance. And the only way I could tell them apart was that JJ would have his shirt tucked in and Will would have his shirt tucked out. That's my first memory. But tell me a little bit about him and his personality and what he was like.
Yeah, so he was studying history in London, and history was his ultimate aim. He loved the subject, all he cared about, really. And from a very young age, he loved it. And he would always be reading Biggles or books on the Russian Revolution or just something to do with history. And if that's Airfix kits or Lego, or he'd always be involved in it. And he wasn't very academically strong. He never really got very good exam results. But no matter what, he'd always just get the enjoyment out of that one subject. And I think that's great. I think each to their own kind of thing. And I remember going to Hendon RAF Museum in London when we were visiting relatives, and we'd be going around the exhibits of the planes and stuff, and he'd be running off and telling us all about that plane and then running off and telling us all about that plane. And it'd almost be like having our own tour guide. It was, you didn't have to read that little plaque at the bottom of the plane because he'd tell us all about it. And he loved it. He thrived off it.
And what sort of brother was he?
Well, at a very young, because he's 4 years older than me, so obviously there was a bit of difference there. And my sister, who's 6 years older than me, they were much closer, and I sort of came along at the end, really. So I was an imposter. But as I was going up through senior school, I sort of started delving into music and rowing, and he was sort of on the ending of school. So we weren't really that close, but I do remember much younger when I was still a little fat blob on the floor. that we were close. We always used to do Lego sets, example, and we'd be playing around with my sister as well.
What's your fondest memory of him?
I think it's got to be, we used to, in another room from here, we used to live in a bunk bed. He'd be on the top and I'll be on the bottom, and just to the left of it, we had this big like Lego collection, and we'd spend like, I don't know, this is when I was 8 and he was, whatever, 12. And we'd spent literal hours into the evening just making Lego together. But I'd always remember I'd get really tired and I'd go to sleep, but I'd wake up about a few hours later and he'd still be there making it. I suppose it was just when I was living with him above me and me below, we were very close. We were very close. We were both very young. But yeah.
It was interesting because I remember talking to Will about him, and he said that of everyone he was at school with, JJ was the one person that nobody had a bad word to say about. He was just friends with everybody. He was kind of a really good guy. And he was head boy, wasn't he, at prep school?
Yes, much to my he got head boy and I didn't. He was head boy. And he actually opened he was head boy when the new Grange opened, which is brilliant. But yeah, he loved it. He loved that that side of it. And I don't really remember that much time, really, because I was so young at that point. But I do remember him being head boy and me thinking, do you know what? That's what I want to be. I only got deputy, but yeah, I'm not sad about that at all, I promise you.
You're not holding that grudge.
Yeah, no, still.
And he did dabble in rowing, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, he was a rower much longer, earlier before I was. He started out as wanting to get fit. He would go on the runs, etc., and the ergs. But he didn't want to jump in the competitive side. All he wanted to do was get out in a single, get out on the water in the summer and just enjoy a bit, have a bit of fun. And I think that's what he did, really.
I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Oh, there is nothing better than being in a boat with your mates or even being in a boat by yourself, sitting on the river in the sun, especially in the Wye Valley. There's nothing more beautiful, is there, really?
I have this sort of idea that when I get to the point where I don't want to compete anymore, I'm going to treat rowing as a sort of weekly picnic. And I've got my spot lined up. You know, when you get up to the cottages, there's that tree that everyone gets stuck in at some point. Yeah. Anyone who's ever been to Monmouth Head has probably got stuck in that tree. We've all hit it. And I'm thinking you could get deliberately caught in that tree and have a picnic. And that would be the dream.
Well, funnily enough, you say that because I do remember him telling me a story of a similar place just below the church. Actually, there's lots of trees there. And
yep,
I remember
been stuck there.
I remember him saying he would just sort of barge his way in a single into the bank, just sort of hold onto a tree and just lie back in the boat. I know, capsizing, etc., but lie back in the boat and just chill for half an hour or so, which I'm sure is not very health and safety.
So did that kind of inspire you to get into rowing? Was it kind of following in his footsteps?
Well, funny enough, when he was rowing, rugby was my life. I've been playing since I was six, and I could think, no, rowing is awful. Why would I want to do that? That's just sitting in boats with some people wearing tight clothing. Who the hell would do that? But no, I broke various bones and stuff, and I eventually thought, you know what, let's give it a crack. I want to get fit. Let's give it a crack. And I never turned back since. By then, my brother, I think, had left school, but yeah, he had. But I thought I'd give it a go, and I'm still here.
And I think you've got more of the competitive spirit.
Yeah, I love competing, and I've always been much more competitive than him. I've been rowing now for five, six years, and I've loved racing. Racing hasn't exactly gone my way most of the time, but still doesn't mean you can't enjoy it.
And am I right in thinking you are captain of boats this year?
Yes, yeah. I don't know why, but I've been chosen to be captain of boats. It's brilliant. I love it. It's a bit more of a leadership role, I suppose, although none of my friends listen to me anyway.
But, I'm sure that's not true.
No, it's brilliant. I love rowing and being a captain. It sort of allows you to have a bit more of a perspective on the rowing squad and who's chosen for the boats, and just gives you a bit more viewpoint, I suppose.
And do you feel a kind of pressure to lead the way when it comes to training and keeping your fitness going in lockdown?
Yeah, well, firstly, there's many more boys in the club that are physically better than me, bigger rogues, bigger weights. I'm not saying that I'm the best by any standard. But yeah, I suppose we always have like weekly teams calls with the squad and the coaches. And we're always looking for new ways to enhance training, if that's, I don't know, just a sit-up challenge on a Saturday, or if that's a Zoom ergo, which we've just delved into after reading your tweets. I thought, why the hell not give it a crack? And I love them. I was joined Sir Matthew Pinsent's Zoom ergo a few days ago with a few of us. And it's just, yeah, just delving things up a bit when in times where it's all a bit confusing, just doing something a bit different together, I think, is the key.
Yeah, because I think the lack of sort of actual physical time together is one of the biggest challenges at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I find, especially during school, when so much is changing from having exams to not having exams to leaving school, all these different changing. I think rowing is the one thing that's just kept the same for me. I know that I'm going to go down the boat club, I'm going to clamber on an erg, and it's going to hurt like hell. I can still do that every week. And I think that's something really important for a squad as a whole, that whole social aspect around training and pushing yourself to the absolute limit. It's brilliant. I love that. I hate it, but I love it.
Yeah, I think we can all relate to that feeling. Love, hate. So going back to JJ, he went off to University of London. It was Queen Mary, and he was studying history. At what point did you become aware that something wasn't quite right?
Well, it was my mum, actually. She was, when my brother was in London, I wasn't really keeping that close contact with you, as you do when you're a 16-year-old boy with your 20-year-old brother. But we'd sort of had a lack of communication from my family to him. He came back for Christmas, and after Christmas, I didn't see him again after Christmas, but my mum started sending messages to university, being like, something's off here. Can you sort of let us know if anything's wrong? And every single time the university said, no, we're not allowed to tell you anything because of student university regulations around information. And that, I think, was the most crucial, devastating thing around what happened to my brother, was if the university had told my mum in her countless emails that something was wrong, then we would have gone straight up to London, picked him up and brought him straight back.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably wouldn't be here now. But yeah, it was sort of a few years in the running. He didn't really enjoy school. He didn't get great A-level results or GCSE results. But when he went to university, he sort of started enjoying all these things and experiencing all these things that he never experienced until university. And so we thought, oh, that's great. He's experiencing those things. He's going to go through this a lot, but like we all do. But obviously things got too much for him and he couldn't deal with them. And eventually it didn't turn out very well.
So it was April 2019. So coming up for 2 years ago, he took his own life. And I can't imagine what that must have been like for you as a family. What kept you going through those times?
Well, it's an interesting one, actually, because for me, my two loves in life is music and rowing. Those are the two things I'm good at. I'm not good at academic stuff at all, to be honest. But the only thing I can describe, actually, was on the day of JJ's funeral, about 4 o'clock, I think, we had a training session in the 8. And I thought to myself, of course I'm going to go training. Why wouldn't I go training? Like, I can't let my teammates down. And we had a race the next week, actually. And so I remember running down the street in my suit and taking off my tie because I was worried. And I was taking my tie, taking off a blazer because I was worried I was going to be late. And I remember getting down to the boat club and everyone thinking, why are you here? And I was like, why wouldn't I be here? It's rowing, it's training. Like, you got to continue, don't you? And I think from playing my drum kit and hitting those drums as hard as I can and pulling that chain as hard as I can on the erg, that's my life.
So you actually did go out in the boat that day. I had no idea because everyone was still back there. Wow.
Yeah, I sort of snuck off quite quickly, really. And yeah, I had to go. My coaches obviously told me, Rory, don't come. Of course you don't have to come, obviously. But I thought, no, why the hell not? Like, it's training. It's my mates. Why wouldn't I want to be in a boat on the water in the summer in the Wye Valley?
And that's really been your therapy.
Yeah. I don't really need much more than I love playing live in concerts. That's what I want to do with my life. I love that side. But going out with your best mates in a boat, come on, that's brilliant. I love it.
And that day, earlier on that day at the funeral, I remember you made a vow that you would do everything you could to make sure that no one else in JJ's position would come to that point. And I know you've been doing a lot of fundraising since then. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we've done a lot. The first thing after my brother's death in the summer was one of my brother's old mates texted me and said, I'm thinking of doing 150 kilometres in a Coxless 4 on the River Wye in the summer. Do you want to join me? And I thought, yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be good. It'll be fun. Little did I know, a few hours into it, it hurts. Everything was hurting. But no, I think we raised $2,000, I think, something like that, just from doing 150 kilometres. And it was brilliant. I loved it. And it was brilliant spending some... I've always been close with my brother's friends, actually, from school. It was good spending some extra time with them, and I still do keep in contact with them. But since then, we've done charity concerts, we've done charity cycles, someone did a sponsored marathon, not me. And there's been, well, Monmouth Rowing Club have been brilliant. Monmouth Rowing Club chose mine to be their charity choice last year. Obviously didn't all go exactly to plan because of COVID, but we raised, I can't remember how much it was now, but it was quite a significant amount.
I think it was about 6,000 in the end, wasn't it? Which is probably more than we would normally have raised sort of through the normal channels.
The other thing was, I remember immediately after my brother died, one of the first things we thought was, don't let this happen to someone else. And the only thing we could possibly think of doing was creating a fundraising page. And so my sister set up a GoFundMe page. And I think within 3 or 4 weeks, we raised something like 5-6 grand. And I thought, bloody hell, That's brilliant. For a little, well, quite little town, Ross and Wyatt, Monmouth, that's bloody hell, good on you lot kind of thing. And so I think we're on the way to our 14, 15,000 pounds now. And the only thing we can do really is be there for other people and raise awareness. That's all we can really do.
What do you think schools and universities should be doing that they're not doing at the moment to support young people?
Well, the first thing that springs to mind, obviously, is if there's a child who's obviously at risk, who's not turning up to lectures, he's quit his first year of university with the family not knowing a thing, and is obviously not sending in work deadlines, have told the university that they're struggling with mental health, there should be a line where the parents are told, no matter if they're over the age of 18, there should be a line that where it says, okay, now this is genuinely serious. Someone needs to be told about this.
And that was the case with JJ. He'd actually stopped turning up altogether.
Yeah, he ended up stopping. He didn't send him work, or he kept lying and saying, oh, I've got this bit of work and I keep correcting it, but I can't send it in. There was obviously something wrong, even to someone who, I'm obviously biased, but someone away from the situation, there was something genuinely obviously wrong. And it's such a shame that the university couldn't say, okay, enough's enough. I'm sending this email, calling this person, and all of this could have been stopped.
Yeah, because there's this sort of strange cutoff point. You know, when my son was at sixth form college, he was 19 by the time he left. But even though he was over 18, if he didn't show up one morning, which happened occasionally, we would get a call straight away. And then somehow there's supposed to be some magic procedure that happens over the course of the summer after they leave, where they go from being someone whose parents are called if they don't show up for half an hour, and someone who is completely independent. Yeah. And there's no line of contact. That seems a very arbitrary cutoff point.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue is that there's a massive, massive difference between sixth form or school or college to university. It's such a massive, you're living by yourself, you're cooking for yourself, you're independently studying, and you may just turn into an adult overnight. And obviously, speaking from personal opinion, I can't wait to get out there and go to new places, but for him, he wasn't the correct person to do that. He lived a very sheltered life during school. It was only towards the latter stages he went on a month-long expedition to India with his school, which he absolutely loved. But he was still a very young kid, really. And yeah, it was the jump between the two places that it was too big.
And did he find it difficult to open up and talk about his feelings?
Well, for me, I never really spoke to him. Unfortunately, I regret it immensely, really. I only spoke to him on not very regular occasions. But I suppose so. There's this massive, massive stigma around mental health in men, and young men especially, that men are masculine. Men can conquer the world by themselves. And it's just not the case, is it? It's absolutely crazy. All it takes is a tiny little conversation that can spark a series of events which can help you so much. And it's something that's just, especially during this COVID pandemic stuff, it's really brought to light, because there's so many young men who have been left alone by themselves and they can't get the help they needed. And it's a really, really sad thing to say, but suicide rates are going up and up and up. I remember it was on the BBC News recently that there was a survey going into boys between the age of 18 and 29, and the suicide thoughts in those boys had increased from 12.5% to 14% just during this pandemic. And that is just a crazy figure, I think. That's a lot just during these 5 months.
Yeah. My son Will was saying that at university, where he is at the moment, you know, he has friends who have never suffered from mental health problems before, but who are really struggling now. Mm. So how is it at school? You're at a boys' school. Are you finding that people are finding it more difficult than usual?
Yeah, well, not just us. I think it's around the country, really. But it's not nice sitting in front of your laptop all day, every day, listening to people talk to you overline about subjects. It's not fun, is it? But for me personally and for my school, they're very good at involving people and getting people to, I don't know, send in a recording of them singing a song they've done or writing a poem or just really simple, stupid things that just are the extra little bit of help, I think. And I've obviously kept up with rowing training and that's helped massively. And music, that's what, these have been my lifeline to me pretty much throughout the last 2 years. And I've sort of just continued them no matter what.
And do you think that boys are getting any better at talking about their feelings, or is it still an issue for people?
Well, I think for me and my very close mates, I think it's not an issue. I have this a very, very good close knit of friends, which if there's something bothering us, we'll just speak about it instead of delaying it fester or whatever. And I think for me personally, I think from my personal experience, there's no point bottling things up. You might as well just speak about it, deal with it. 10 minutes later, it'll be over. Or if it's not, it can still be resolved. But I'd like to think so. I think there's so much research, there's so many big celebrity figures publicizing this, these documents and the percentages of suicide rates. I think it's got to make an effect. I hope it does.
Yeah. And we've talked about what schools and universities should be doing. What about friends and family who are concerned about someone? What, obviously you're not an expert, as you were keen to emphasize to me before, but what do you think, you know, if most of us have someone we're a bit concerned about at the moment, what do you think the best thing to do is?
I think, well, there's no correct answer to this, but I think at the end of the day, just being there for them, if that's just having a conversation about how they're feeling or having a conversation about nothing, just having fun and having a laugh, which I think in times like this is the most important thing. And just keeping contact, I think, is the key thing. That's the issue that with me and my brother and my family was there was just a lack of communication. If my brother had spoken to my mum or my dad or me or my sister, then we wouldn't be in this dilemma now. It's communication is the key, I think, to everything. Keep that communication open and everything and anything can be resolved.
That's really wise, actually. I think that thought that, I think people sometimes hesitate to contact someone they're worried about because they think that they've got to address the issue of their friend or loved one's mental health. But I think that's a really important thing to emphasize, that it doesn't necessarily have to be addressing that issue, just being there, talking to them about anything, about what film they watched on Netflix last night or whatever it is, just keeping those kind of communication lines open.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there.
And if there was someone listening who is struggling themselves at the moment, what message would you want to get across to them?
Well, I think it's a very simple one. It's you're obviously not alone. My brother is by no means in any case special. He wasn't the first person ever to be in this situation. And I think there's so many people out there to help you. From is it Samaritans to the mine? There's so many thousands and millions of people who would happily help you. All it takes is a text message to that person or a call or email. It's so simple to fix things. And it just needs you to take that leap of faith and put your trust in someone. And things will get better. It's as simple as that. They will get better.
I'll put links to all of those in show notes. And I know the Samaritans also have an app now where and kind of check in every day and just sort of, you know, log how you're feeling. And they've got obviously helplines and everything like that. So looking ahead, you're sort of halfway through your academic year now, or more than halfway through now. What are you hoping for the rest of this year? Because normally as captain of boats, you would be looking forward to, you know, National Schools Regatta, Henley, where Monmouth has been, you know, working their way up the ladder. What are your hopes for this year?
Well, I've got to say, because obviously my parents are going to be listening to this, academic A-levels.
Oh, of course.
Full force towards that, obviously. But rowing and music, they're my two ultimate aims. Racing, I really hope we get some racing this year, and might be a bit naive of me, but I think we will. I heard Marlo Regatta have released a tweet saying that they're planning on going ahead, which is excellent. But racing, number one, I think, is the biggest thing, I think. Just being able to it's really cringy, but have a bit of fun, really. Mm. Have a bit of fun in the boat. And concerts, I cannot wait to be able to play live again. It's the most stressful thing in my life, but I absolutely love it. There's not a feeling like them playing live. I love it. So looking forwards, A-levels, that we're not sitting exams now, but we might be. I'm not sure yet, but we aren't, but we are.
Do you really not know at this point? Well,
We're not taking A-levels, that's sure. However, I know they released a statement a few days ago that they might be making schools take small mini tests or something. So it's sort of like...
Oh, that's so difficult not knowing.
It's good fun. no, but A-levels, racing and music. Those are my three things that I can't wait to do.
And how is this year's First Eight shaping up? I appreciate you've not had much time on the water, but you have had a little. How's it looking?
Oh, it's good. It's much better. We've got some bigger scores this year. We've got some big weights being lifted in the gym, and it's good. It's much better than it was last year, I've got to admit. I think the squad as a whole has just matured a bit, which I think, me included, I think it's a very important thing, especially in schoolboy rowing. But it's coming on well. We want to get out there and show Havlik how good we are, or how bad we are, and we want to prove ourselves, because Monmouth, I think, has always been seen as quite a small little school, and that's not really true. We've got a bit of water, we've got a boat, and we've got 8 blades. What more do you need, really? It doesn't mean you can't... I'm not saying we're going to be winning Henley or getting a gold medal at national schools, but it doesn't mean we can't show ourselves being all right.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Monmouth has... The last few years has been punching above its weight, really, hasn't it? There were some successes a couple of years ago at what was it, national schools?
Yeah,
it was
2019, first day. They won the Child Beale, which is non-championship eights, and they got a bronze medal in championship coxed fours, which for Monmouth School is actually really quite good. And that was an exceptional crew, and they were long time in the making. But we don't want to let that slide now. Now we've made that level, we're very much there or up.
Where do you sit in the boat?
Well, I prefer seven, and in 2020, I sat at seven, but this year it's all still up in the air. I'm being chosen at three or seven at the moment. So it's sort of, as much my friends delight in putting me at three, and the coaches, I love them. I really hope I'm chosen to be seven.
I love sitting at seven. That's my probably, well, seven and bow. Bow I like because no one can see you and you can see everyone. So you've got all the intel, But seven is, there's something special about the seven seat, isn't there?
I can abuse all my friends from the seven seat without being abused myself. So it's, I.
And you get sort of permission to whinge that everyone's rushing you.
Oh, very much. You don't understand how much I do it. It's brilliant. I'll start screaming down the boat. Stop, bloody. Yeah, it's brilliant. I love it. And I really hope that I'm chosen seven, because I was seven at J16 and I was seven in 2020. Obviously, we didn't race, but I still chose myself to be seven. So. Well, hopefully, we'll see.
Well, we'll put it on record here and now.
Yes.
This is, you know, shout out to the coaches, yes. Rui for the seven seat. I'm backing you, officially backing you. And I think we can get some support on Twitter for this. I have to say, though, I think the three seat is underestimated. As I have said before, I think it's, I don't understand why it's considered the numpty seat. I think that's unreasonable and unfair. But I'm with you. It's sort of... It's neither fish nor fowl. I think you want to be there at the front of the boat, at the pointy end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, Rui, thank you so much for coming on. It's a difficult subject to talk about, I know, but I so appreciate you coming on and raising awareness like this. This is going out the day before Time to Talk Day, and I will put links to everything in the show notes so people can follow up. And if anybody needs help or support, find out where it is. And I also want to say, on behalf of Monmouth Rowing Club, how proud we are to have you in our club. You are a brilliant ambassador for the sport. And I just want to say thank you so much.
All right, well, thank you very much for having me. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Wow. Well, I'm sure you'll agree that Rui really is a remarkable young man, and it was a real privilege to have him on the show. As Rui said, if you're struggling with your mental health at the moment, please know that you're not alone. Don't suffer in silence. speak to someone, anyone, whether that's a friend or a relative or someone at one of the mental health charities. And I've put details of some of them in the show notes. And if you're worried about someone you know, don't just wait, get in touch with them. You may be hesitating because you don't know what to say or because you feel you don't have the expertise or the knowledge to help them. And that is really understandable. But honestly, as Rui said, just picking up the phone to them or dropping them a text can be a help in itself. Thank you again for listening. I've really appreciated all of your lovely feedback and your suggestions for guests. My guest next week was suggested by listeners. She is Ira Parry, who has been a coach with the GB rowing team and now runs High Performance Parenting. And I think you'll really enjoy our interview. And until then, next stroke, easy oar.